The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at coopradio.org. Dallas Arcand is a multi-talented artist who won the world spotlight with his hoop dancing at the 2011 Winter Olympic Games opening ceremonies in Vancouver. He's a three-time world champion hoop dancer from the Alexander Plains Cree Nation near Edmonton, Alberta. He recently spoke to The Pulse's Gunarji O'Sullivan on her own show, When Spirit Whispers, where this interview originally aired on Monday, November 29th.
Here is Dallas Arcand. Welcome to the show, Dallas.
Hello, everybody.
And you're calling us from Edmonton today.
Yes, I am.
Really? What's the weather like there?
It's sunny and kind of like spring. It's supposed to be winter. It's in the plus temperature, which is, I guess it's in part of global warming, because when I was a kid, this time of year we would have at least 2 feet of snow. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of mild and warm.
Well, I really want to thank you for the work that you're doing with the powwow aerobics and the recent sharing circles. You've covered a lot of ground, and I like how you're showing by example how we can survive during this pandemic and how we can continue to thrive. You know, like, when did you, let me backtrack, okay? You first won the champion hoop dance at 2010, but you had started hoop dancing when you were 13, and that introduced you to the circle. One thing I didn't know about you was that you were also a product of the 60s scoop, which I find really interesting that you're able to maintain culture and tradition even though you have been disconnected and removed from your own people.
Yeah, it's always been a difficult challenge and balance, being able to be an artist and also to pursue your goals and your dreams and to achieve things like the world championships and some of the musical aspirations that I've had in my career. And, you know, just being an artist and being able to survive too is another thing too.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I first started this journey as being an artist, a lot of people didn't think that I would make it anywhere. And even people in the industry, like other professional dancers or choreographers I've worked with in the past, they sat me aside and said, "Hey, Dallas, do you have a backup plan, or is there something else that you can do in case this doesn't work for you?" And I did have that talk a few times, and at the time, I just thought that they were trying to, like, rain on my parade and destroy all my dreams. But it was actually some good things to think about in my journey, in my career as an artist, because I actually, in fact, did go get my education and did learn some of those lessons that I needed to learn. Not that I was ever going to give up being an artist, but I had to, you know, I had to, like, relearn culture, and I had to go back to school from being a dropout, and then also from being somebody that wasn't raised in culture. I had to go out there and physically learn a lot of those lessons myself, and then put in the work to develop myself
well,
as
you know,
a person.
Speaking of school, Dallas, one of the things that I had to do too was go back to school, and that's actually where I met you, at the Anaquin Center in Penticton during the NAPAP program. Was that one of the tools that you put into your toolkit in finding and connecting with your own traditional forms and blending them with contemporary forms of music and entertainment?
Yeah, that was part of my skill set, as well as a chance for me to develop. You know, at the same time, I was still doing shows and stuff while I was going to school, so it made it a little bit more difficult for me to balance school out with being an artist and my lifestyle, because while I was at an Alkin Center, that's when Vancouver 2010 Olympics was in Vancouver, and I had a major role to play there, and not only opening ceremonies, but also I had like a whole month's full schedule of performances and events that I performed at and was contracted to do different performances at. So during that time, it was really difficult for me to balance the two out, but I found a way. But what really helped me earlier on is when I went to school in Calgary at Mount Royal, like before my artist career took off, I used a lot of that downtime as personal development time, because I moved from my community, my reserve, Alexander First Nation. I went from living out in the country and living like a really simple life. And well, for those listeners that know what res life is all about, like I mean, like out in the country res life, like not city Indian res life or urban res life. Now I'm talking about actual res, like where you don't really have a 7-Eleven to go to, or where you don't have all the conveniences of the city close by. Like I mean, out in the country, like in Alberta, a lot of our reserves are outside of the city. Like I know in BC, it's a little bit different. Like in Vancouver, for example, there's reserves like right in the city, like Capilano Reserve, or you know, the other nations that are surrounding there. I apologize in advance for not knowing exactly what nations there. You know, even though I've heard their name quite a few times during the Olympics, but basically, it's a lot different for us, like if we're living on the res life. So I had to go from that simple country life to right into the city and kind of get thrown into the rat race, I guess, in a big way. It was for me. So. But that helped me grow, though, and helped me grow and be able to survive. And that's what eventually put me into a thriving mode, where I went from survival to thriving in the industry. And yeah, it just gave me, like, so much more tools to be part of my success, you know?
Well, I know that you started your journey as a hoop dancer when you were 13. When did you pick up the flute and the guitar?
I picked that up later on in life. Like in 2002, when I was in Spain, I had a contract with Universal Studios Mediterranean, and I was just young at the time, and I was still learning a lot about culture and learning a lot about all the different stories and the different instruments that we use and the different contexts in which we perform as artists, as indigenous artists. And so in my time over there when I was in Spain, I got introduced to the flute kind of coincidentally, accidentally, in a way. I used it to fulfill my loneliness while I was over there, because I was overseas and I had to basically be uprooted from my family, because I went from kind of living a normal life to all of a sudden I'm living in another country. And so I used the flute as a way to connect with back home by playing and learning it and studying it, and it actually brought me closer to my roots and back home. So that's how I got like more involved with incorporating culture into performance and learning things like the flute and learning how to perform in front of different audiences. And also my overall confidence went up the more skill sets I learned.
And how about the language? I know that you were displaced and disconnected. How did you manage to pick up language as you have? Did that come with the music, before the music, or after the music?
Yeah, well, learning language is is another thing in itself, but I kind of grew up with it being around, but it was never actually fluently spoken to me at any given time in my life. So I learned as much as I could, and you know, the part of the catch 22 of being an artist and being traveling all the time is that I'm not always around the language and where I can focus in on becoming fluent with it. And even if I was fluent with it, I wouldn't have anybody to speak with. And that's part of the problem with a lot of language carriers nowadays, because well, except for like back home in a reserve, like when you live there, there's a lot more language programming out there to learn the language. But I know firsthand, in order to learn a language and make it stick, you have to immerse yourself in that culture and speak that language all the time. Like how I learned Spanish when I was in Spain.
Mm-hmm.
I lived there for 8 months, so I had no choice. I had to learn it, otherwise I would be kind of just stuck in the middle of a rock and a hard place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. But I do like how you blend little words like the hookahay, the word hookahay,
hookahay,
yeah. And socasimo, and you know, your flute music is very reminiscent of traditions, and you are doing a really great job of composing the music that you have so far. And then you sing country, of all things, right? It's so amazing. You have like such a wide range. You've got the mixes going on with the DJ Crazy Cree and the flute, you know, and then I find you singing country as well, right? So it must be really fun to be you, never a dull moment.
Yeah, it definitely, it gives me a lot of things to develop and work on. You know, like if I feel like I'm getting too exhausted or burnt out in one area, I kind of switch over to the next thing in development, which is songwriting, singing, like practicing singing. Like it's safe to say that I've mastered the dancing part because I've achieve some of the highest level of my potential there in the dancing world. You know, winning the world championships is just one of the many milestones that I've accomplished as a dancer, as a performer, as an indigenous artist. Those types of things were like when I was first starting out, they looked like I was trying to climb Mount Everest or something like that, right? It looked like a big hurdle to get over, and I didn't think I'd ever get over it. But with time, passion, consistency, and practice and patience, it all eventually I did get there, and I did climb to that peak of where I wanted to go, like that Mount Everest in my career. And now what I'm using is that same kind of drive, motivation and determination to get to other peaks and valleys in my career, which is what I'm working on right now with singing, songwriting, and continuing to produce content, more albums, like this new sharing circle thing that I came up with. That's something I'm very passionate about, because I get to share things in there that can be somewhat controversial, or it's those in-between things that need to be talked about. Like, nobody really talks too much about what it's like to be a half-breed and some of the challenges. And I don't mean any offense by calling it half-breed, but mixed race, I guess, would be another label to put on it. You know, when you're mixed between two cultures, you know, especially being indigenous and European, that's my mix.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's hard because on the res, you know, a lot of natives, they don't like white people because of what the history happened, right?
Yeah.
So I'm half white and I'm hated because of that. And, you know, not all the time, but in some cases, it's made it difficult for my life and my progress on the reserve, because a lot of people don't like me because of the way I look.
You mentioned that in one of your sharing circles most recently, and I recall you saying that some of your brothers and some of your cousins are darker than you, right? And that you're light-skinned. But also, one of the things I'd like to point out is you have children as well who are even darker than you at this point. So you're caught in the middle on both sides of the generations in many ways.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
So, you know, that's been challenging. So, you know, that's what I mean with all my platforms. I just try to, you know, I've learned in my career that, you know, it's always good to keep growing and keep learning and keep developing. And also to everything I do, does it add value to the world or to other people?
Mm-hmm.
So that's constantly what I'm thinking about in my works. Like, does a song help somebody out? Does a dance help somebody out? Does a talk help somebody out? Does powwow dance aerobics help people stay healthy? You know, things like that. And as I mature in my career and in my life, I'm learning that these things are very important to people, and it's not just a vanity contest out there or a contest to see who's better. It's a contest, for me, it's a contest to see of what value can I bring to people's lives in any given time, moment, that people need that help or need that little uplifting moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also to create a platform to have these discussions about whether you're light enough, dark enough, and whether you're being bullied in your community just for being a half-breed. And you know, I remember in the 80s in our big houses in Alert Bay, they wouldn't allow half-breeds to dance in our big house. And so I imagine it was the same straight across the board from one nation to another. And then things started to lift. And quite frankly, I've seen cases where half-breeds take our traditions and culture more seriously than full-blooded native would.
Yeah, oh yeah, I've seen that a lot too, and I found myself in that same situation too, where I took it so serious that, you know, after ceremonies, people would be joking around, and I'd be like, well, what, didn't we just talk about this in the ceremony, and how, like, this is important, why are you guys making fun of this, you know, or why are you guys messing around, like I found myself too in that position too, where I took it so seriously that it was more to the degree that even like some of the full breeds, like full indigenous peers that I was around at the time, didn't take it as serious and took it for granted, I guess, in a way. And all I was trying to do is just listen and be respectful and be transparent to the message and the cause of really what our ceremonies, culture, and tradition is really about.
And you've also passed some of your abilities, your skills, like hoop dancing to your son, Dallas Jr., and you and he will be working on an up-and-coming single. Can you tell us a little bit more about that process?
I've actually successfully passed on the hoop dancing and all the resources and tools that I've developed over the years. I passed them on to my son, and he's actually making a go at it with his career. He's doing his own shows now. He goes on his own little tours, and he has his contracts and stuff like that. So he's doing well with it. Like, I didn't really have to like train him, but he still has a lot to learn in a big way, because right now I'm trying to push him towards education. It's hard when it's your own child, when it's your own children. It's the hardest to teach and to discipline and to you know, it's a lot easier to teach somebody else's kid, but it's been always an ongoing challenge for me to teach him and to guide him, and for him to see past okay, I'm just your dad, but I'm also trying to advise you and give you some good advice. And it's been a constant challenge with my son and my daughter to maintain that relationship and to be there for them, be their support and all that. But right now, my son and I, we are working on some music right now for the new DJ Crazy Cree album. I'm also collaborating with several other artists, not just him, but I'm utilizing his youth and what he knows about electronic music in this. So I'm kind of, we're kind of crossing knowledge and information. Like, I know a lot about traditional music, and he knows a lot about electronic music, so we're just combining our interests. And then also, I know a lot about DJing too. Like, I was actually DJing back in the days when it was just vinyl and tape. So that's how far back I went. But nowadays, when you're a DJ, you're an actual producer. So a DJ producer, and that's what I consider myself to be, because I produce the music that I DJ, that I spin, that I mix live on shows that I've done in festivals. And sometimes my music even gets used in film and television in a lot of different areas. So there's a lot to it when it comes to music. As you know, running a radio station, there's a lot of red tape to cross before you actually get music played on the airwaves.
Definitely. We've been speaking with Dallas Arcand, who is a three-time world champion hoop dancer, a keynote speaker, skilled workshop presenter, storyteller, musician specializing in education and healing workshops, anti-bullying, and hoop dance 101. I want to ask you one final question, Dallas. And I saw on one of your live streams that you are actually going professional with a show called Powwow Aerobics.
Yeah, it's actually been picked up by an American company, and I actually just finished filming the professional version of it, where we had a full film crew, and I've actually added a couple of other dancers, Chanel Monroe and Shanley Spence, who's also a hoop dancer, and we were actually commissioned by the Center of Disease Control, actually funded a program for us to do for the Great Lakes Tribal Council in the United States. So it's going out potentially to 20 million viewers. And next thing we're going to do is actually pitch it to a couple of different broadcasters that might be able to pick up the show in the future. But if not, we're still just going to continue on our progress and growing the channel, and me being a content creator, just continuing to connect with people in many different ways, whether it's on my online platforms or other media outlets, which are sure to come in the near future.
Okay, well, thank you for sharing your time with us on When Spirit Whispers, Co-op Radio 100.5 CFRO. Are there any closing words?
Thank you for having me on the show for the Co-op Radio, and also my thoughts and prayers go out to all the people right now that are affected by the floods in BC. You know, Mother Earth is powerful, and we all know that, and I guess we just have to know that power and know that we have that power within ourselves to live in harmony with that. So my thoughts and prayers go out to all those ones that are having a difficult time right now. I wish you guys safety and a fast, full recovery. And, if there's anything I could do in the future, I'm willing to do any fundraisers or anything like that, or any sort of help. I'm definitely extending out myself to participate in any of that. I'm willing to help out if needed in the future, which a lot of people are, I'm so amazed of all the people helping out there in this challenging situation for all the people out in the lower mainland BC area. Yeah, man, I'm totally there with you in spirit, and I hope that we can get through this natural disaster in a timely fashion and a safe manner. So, again, my thoughts and prayers are out with all of you.
That was Dallas Archand in conversation with Gunarji O'Sullivan. You can learn more about Dallas Archand at his website, dallasarchand.ca. Gunarji O'Sullivan is the host of When Spirit Whispers and Going Indigenous on Monday and Tuesday afternoons, as well as Late Night with Savages on Wednesday evenings and Klahauya FM on Thursday afternoons. Check out the program schedule at coopradio.org for all the details. CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.